Stay tuned for Cinema Clash with Charlie and Hannah, featuring two film critics with distinctly different tastes in movies, Charlie Jewell of charliejewell.com and Hannah Buchdahl of chickflix.net. He thinks her tastes are shallow. She thinks his are pretentious. Listen in as they discuss and debate new releases and other film-related topics. Let the clash begin.
Hello and welcome to the Cinema Clash. I am Charlie Jewell of charliejewell.com.
And I'm Hannah Buchdahl of chickflix.net.
And another week, another superhero blockbuster.
Yes.
And I'm going to go ahead and give it away. I kind of attached the wine to the superhero.
Ooh.
This is from Chile. It's a Cabernet Sauvignon. It's called La Mission. Do you know why I picked La Mission?
Because Wonder Woman's on a La Mission.
She is on a La Mission, but more importantly, Chris Pine, as the American / British spy.
I couldn't tell what he was supposed to be. He's very funny.
Keeps yelling at her, Diana, we're on a mission. We have to go. Stop messing around. We're on a mission.
You are the only, only person who is somewhat is hung up on that. You just missed the whole point of this movie, and you're just ruining it.
Hence the theme for tonight. Charlie is a minority.
Absolutely.
There are some fresh tomatoes, some certified fresh tomato films from our fellow critics that I am not in lockstep with. And I'm going to stand my ground.
Yeah, go for it.
So let's start with Wonder Woman.
Mm-hmm.
Not the first film to feature a front and center female superhero, and not the first superhero film directed by a woman. However, it's the first major, we're talking Marvel, DC comic book universe, with a female lead and female director. So congratulations, Gal Gadot, and congratulations, Patty Jenkins.
Yeah.
DC is known for sour, serious dour, Man of Steel, Batman v Superman, Dawn of Justice, and the ridiculous Suicide Squad. So I wonder, and tell me if you agree, did Patty Jenkins attempt to lighten the mood on purpose? I think she did, and I think she overcorrected.
I don't think she overcorrected. I think what she did is why this movie will work on multiple levels. It's why it will appeal to the women, but it will also appeal to the superhero base, the ones who like, for instance, the Marvel movies. I think it moves it more towards a Marvel-style humor, an Avengers, Iron Man, Captain America type of lightness that serves this character, serves the Wonder Woman story well.
Wonder Woman is kind of copying the Avenger universe. First we had Captain America, solo story, Thor, Iron Man, and then finally brought them all together in the Avengers. They're going to do that again. We knew that from Dawn of Justice. Later this fall comes Justice League.
Mm-hmm.
Wonder Woman will be a part of that. Ben Affleck will be back as Batman, and so on. Princess Diana. Diana, Princess of Themyscira. Is an Amazon. We've all heard of the Amazons. They were created by Zeus to protect the humans. And they don't do that. They train. They train on their Eden, their desert island bubble. And they train for millennia, and they ignore the humans. Even if the humans engage in a world war and slaughter each other, the Amazons don't care.
That's not they don't care. They're not even aware of what's going on.
Well, they're not even taking a peek. It's their job to check in. Until it crash lands on their beach. Chris Pine as Steve Trevor. He's infiltrated. I want to say Nazis, but they weren't Nazis yet. He's infiltrated the Germans.
The German army. Yeah,
and the German army also lands on the beaches, and there's a big battle early on. Bows and arrows and swords versus guns, and there's a destroyer out there in the water that disappears somewhere. They never confront that destroyer. And shifts the tone of the film. Diana wants to leave. She has wanderlust. Her mother, Queen Hippolyta, played by Connie Nielsen, says, don't go, I love you, you know, those are humans, they're not worth it. And there's a philosophical foundation for the film. Are humans worth it? Are humans good? Are humans evil? Are they inherently good? Diana believes they are inherently good, but outside influencers, namely Ares, their immortal enemy, the god of war, influences humans to try to kill each other. That's what she believes. She has no proof, but she wants to go to Europe with Steve and find Ares and kill Ares and end what we now know as World War I. I liked it. when it started with the philosophical stuff. I didn't like it when it became a screwball comedy.
It was never a screwball comedy. It was a chick flick. It became a combination action movie, romantic drama with a lighthearted approach to it. But never strays from delivering what I think was just a nice message. And this Wonder Woman kicks butt. She really does. She leads the charge going into battle.
She has a big sword. She has a big shield. She has the lasso of truth.
Yeah, there is decent chemistry between her and between Gal Gadot and Chris Pine as the leads in this. And it is funny. I mean, all the Chris's really do get mixed up. It's like, okay, is this Chris Pine, Chris Evans, who plays Captain America, or what's the other Chris? The one from Hell or High Water.
That's Chris Pine.
That is Chris Pine. So there's a third Chris. It's
There's always
a third Chris. But I do think that the chemistry makes it work. It's a fish out of water. Chris Hemsworth is the other one. And so you could almost interchange any Chris in that role. But I think they carry it off well. The banter between them is very genuine. And it acknowledges how each of them is sort of new to what the other one brings to the table, and she doesn't quite understand when he's trying to do chivalrous things, because to her it's like women are really on equal footing or stronger than the guys. And so when he tries to do some things to protect her or to be chivalrous, she doesn't quite get it. And that provides a little extra humor and lightness to the story.
And it's that humor and lightness that set. I have nothing wrong with them trying to make a lighter humor. Iron Man worked for me, and that's light. He's snarky. He's mischievous. So director Patty Jenkins, she directed Monster way back in 2003. Got Charlize Theron her Oscar. She presents Diana multiple times in this film as the country bumpkin. As the fish out of water.
Not a country bumpkin. Fish out of water, maybe.
As the
I'm
from a backwater island. Now I'm in central London. And oh, don't I stick out. Look at my bare shoulders, tee hee. Abnormally long department store montage.
That's how you're viewing it. But she certainly doesn't see anything wrong with what she's wearing. And, you know, she comes from this paradise island, and she comes upon London, and she's like, wow, this is pretty ugly, because it was dreary and dark and not the green paradise that she was so used to. And that I think she sort of felt sorry for people that they were living in conditions that didn't mimic where she came from. And so I just think you viewed it through a completely different lens than 99.9% of the people that were in that theater, most of whom came out of it, you know, very satisfied with this movie. And I don't rank as high. I mean, some people just came out glowing about this movie and calling it possibly the best superhero movie of all time.
No,
it's not. But it's very good. And it just works on several levels for a lot of different people. And I just think you need to embrace that. And the guy, you know, somebody asked me, you know, what, they couldn't find women to write this movie because it's directed by a woman, it stars this woman, it's about Wonder Woman, but it's written by a team of guys. But the guys who wrote it, I mean, one guy is, you know, his portfolio includes The O.C., Grey's Anatomy.
Yeah, he's the main writer.
Alan
Heinberg is his
Yeah, name. And so he's written stuff. He knows, and Scandal, he knows how to write for the chicks. And Zack Snyder is another, you know, the stories by him. And that makes sense because he's sort of behind so many of these Justice League movies that are coming out.
He's Superman.
Yeah, and so you need somebody who can bring it all together and make sure that the story will work with the rest of this franchise. So I had no problem with, I felt there was a decent balance. I think the fact that it had, you know, that particular writing staff, and in addition to a woman directing it, that it then ended up landing in a place that can appeal to both.
Well, it's somewhat of a recycled story. We've seen superheroes in wartime before. Captain America, we were introduced to in World War II. He joins as a grunt. And becomes, well, Captain America, Steve Rogers, Steve Trevor,
There are a lot of parallels. And a shield.
So Wonder Woman somewhat single-handedly wins World War I, and that's fine. To quote Hannah, that's fine. But she's also impacting pop culture. Alamo Drafthouse. Good on ya. They want women's only screenings. They think it's probably marketing for them.
Sure.
For a female-led superhero movie. Great. But that's created a backlash. Some men want men-only screenings. Some men say it's very divisive and even anti-feminist. And that's tongue-in-cheek. That would happen for whatever. But Lebanon! Lebanon has banned the film. Not like a Malaysia thing, which bans like 50 Shades Darker because, they don't have sex in Malaysia. Lebanon banned it because they cannot handle that Gal Gadot is an Israeli, and they will not celebrate an Israeli on their movie theater posters.
Yeah, apparently they decided that it violates the ban against the import of Israeli products, that Gal Gadot would be considered an Israeli product. And
she got paid through other means, not through Lebanon.
Yeah, I mean, she is a... she's very good in this, and she deserves... I'm glad she got this role. It took me... And she served 2 years in the Israeli army, as all Israeli citizens. They do their 2 years. They do their time. She did hers. So she actually comes at this role with a little bit of extra street cred from having actually been in the army for 2 years. When she first comes on screen, she has an accent that's really difficult to sometimes kind of figure out what it is, which is strange because, so many of us have this vision of Wonder Woman being like this all-American superhero. In this film, she's a world superhero, not an American superhero. And so the accent actually works in her favor later. You sort of get much more used to it because you find out that she's multilingual. She speaks like over 100 languages. And so I think then her character, very much the way the Steve Rogers character as Captain America grew on me after the first film, I see this character actually having real growth potential in the same way that the Captain America franchise had that potential. And I like the later Captain America even better than the original, than the first film.
Well, I like that you brought up accents, because I noticed the Amazons, who have been chilling out together for 3,000 years, around, give or take a decade. And, there aren't that many of them. They all have different accents. Like, every single one of them.
Yeah. Yeah. But it sort of gives the film, I guess, what would be more of a multicultural feel, because you don't identify any of the people as being a particular nationality. I mean, I really didn't feel that at all. It's like you have good guys and bad guys. And Chris Pine, it was like, okay, is he an American working for British intelligence? But he certainly has an American accent, so he doesn't have a British accent. And yet, the film takes place, really, most of it, in London. And so you're like, I wasn't quite sure how that was all coming into play. So you have to just kind of scrap some of the, not worry about some of the plot elements, because that kind of stuff goes hand in hand with any of these
it's tough.
Like, superhero fantasy movies.
Unlike Batman, she's immortal. Mm-hmm. I guess. But she does age, because she starts out as a kid, but we don't know when she was a kid and what is one Wonder Woman year versus a human year?
Yeah, the aging thing is a little strange, because that you'll see Wonder Woman.
Because we saw her already in Donald Justice.
We saw her already years, in almost present day times. So here you're kind of seeing her, back in like 1914 or something.
18.
So that's a lot... she looks the same 100 years later. And so I'm not quite sure whether that's ever really explained in a way that people can grasp. And the fact that she was made out of clay, that's a whole other, very bizarre.
Reminds me of the dreidel song.
Yeah.
But I'm not alone. This only has a 93%.
There are a few people out there, just very much, it's probably those same people who were objecting to the Alamo women-only screening.
Don't let me in with that.
Which my response to that is, would those same people have complained if it was a ladies' night only screening of Magic Mike? I doubt it. So, I think if anything, all of the controversy, I think Lebanon banning it, I think the guys who had a problem with the Alamo Drafthouse doing ladies-only screenings, I think that will do nothing but help drive women to go out and see this film this weekend.
Another film I disagree with the masses on, and you didn't see it. I took my 4-year-old to see Captain Underpants, the first epic movie. Apparently, and I was too old for it when it came out. It's 12 books. It's based on a series of 12 books, comic books, but in novel form. And they've sold like 70 to 80 million copies, so he's a popular character. The two boys, fourth graders, George and Harold, who in their spare time create a comic book hero and draw him. This is my first exposure to them. I never read any of the books, didn't know anything about them, so I am walking in blind. And I took my 4-year-old, because he's going to love it. Because, well, A, he likes all movies. He can't pick a favorite because he likes all movies. 10 minutes in, he leans over and says, "Dada, I don't like this movie. I want to go home." And I was surprised, because it's 94% toilet humor. The villain is called Professor Poopy Pants. His vehicle is a gigantic toilet that he sprays kids with to kill their laughter so they won't laugh at his name anymore. This film has 86% on Rotten Tomatoes, and it blows my mind. I asked him right before we put him to bed tonight, before we did this podcast, I said, "What do you want to tell, if you could say about this movie, what would you want to say?" He says, "It's exasperating." And it is. I did not connect with Captain Underpants barely at all. Like, I understand the friendship between the two boys. I like them, because everybody in elementary school has that best friend. Their arch enemy is the principal, Principal Krupp. He's voiced by Ed Helms. We know Ed Helms. And, he likes to keep the school morale very low. And George, voiced by Kevin Hart, he hypnotizes him with this cheap knockoff, Chinese ring that's worth like 4 cents. And he hypnotizes him to become Captain Underpants. So he switches from this dour principal into tra-la-la, Captain Underpants. But he doesn't have any superhero powers. He just fights fake evil because there isn't even any evil out there until Professor Poopy Pants showed up. I was so bored in this film. There's a couple one-liners for adults. David Soren, the director, I never saw the film, but in 2013 he directed Turbo, the snail that wants to like race in the 8500.
Yes. God, I forgot all about that movie, but I did see it.
This is a DreamWorks film, but it's not DreamWorks Animation because they farmed it out. They had too many movies going on, like Boss Baby, so they farmed it out to this boutique animation shop in Montreal. But at least it's 2D, it's not 3D. Hannah, I was not feeling this movie.
I see all these other reviews. I see tweets that other critics have put out there. I kind of wish Kate had seen it, your wife, because I feel like I might have gotten a better sense of whether you and the kid are just in the minority for a reason, if you just didn't get something that other people maybe did pick up on and enjoy.
Well, I read other critic reviews, and they were like, you gotta, leave your mind at the door, because you're just gonna love the toilet humor. And I have nothing against toilet humor. I like a good fart joke the next guy, but there's something about here that just was terrible.
Yeah, I mean, it's certainly not a premise that I feel I need to run out and try and catch up and see this one. So I'm not sorry I missed it, but I am curious as to what makes so many other folks be singing its praises to the extent that they are. And before I forget, it was Chris Pratt was the other Chris that I just could not think of.
So there's four Chrises, really.
There are four Chrises. So going back to Wonder Woman for a second there.
But it's not. I remember last year, I think it made both of our top 10 worst lists, Norm of the North. Mm-hmm. I don't think it's Norm of the North bad. It's Ratchet and Clank bad. That's a film everyone's already forgotten.
I have a really hard time believing that, because I think if you go and you look at like the Rotten Tomatoes score for Ratchet and Clank or for Norm of the North, it's going to be
very, very low. Way below. But this one's saying, this is the best kids movie ever either. They're just saying, mm-hmm. It's something to take your 4-year-old to.
Right.
But 4-year-olds in the audience were not rolling on the floor and laughing out loud. They really weren't.
That's important to know, because if there's not enough to make it it's not a Lego Batman kind of movie that really has a level that works for adults and is not, or Boss Baby was entertaining. If it doesn't have at least some of those elements that make the adults happy to tag along, and more importantly, that makes the kids happy, then it's certainly probably worth waiting for a rental of that.
Well, our next film, I'm with popular sentiment. It has a low tomato score, and I know why. It's terrible. Churchill.
It's not terrible.
Usually.
How low? It doesn't have that low score.
38.
Does it really?
38.
I would put it at like a 50-50 type of movie. I thought it was fine.
Winston Churchill is a revered historical figure. He's not myth yet, but he's legend. You know, he was involved in the Boer War. He messed up in World War I, and according to this film, that messed up his strategic psyche, affecting his views on D-Day. I learned a lot about Churchill in this movie. I had no idea. He was firmly against the idea of storming the beaches of Normandy. He thought it was going to be another Gallipoli. We're going to send a million boys there and a million body bags are going to come home. And you see him confronting the king and Eisenhower saying, "You're wrong. Do not do this." And there's 2 hours of speechifying. This bloated, and his speeches are all yelling. He's yelling at his wife, at his secretary, at anyone who would listen. That what a bad idea this is, and I hated it, Hannah.
You did not see the same movie I did.
I hated this movie.
What were you drinking, La Mission all week? Because I'm telling you, I just think you're wrong on so far.
You're in the minority on this one.
No, I don't think I am. I think I'm right in the middle of this one.
Read the post review. They're with me.
No, I read one in the Express that I thought was okay. You know, in their other thing. But Artie Chick reviewed it for chickflix.net, Jill, and she and I were pretty consistent with our views of this, that it's actually a very good small movie. It's not the kind of movie you need to watch on the big screen at all. In fact, I would say you definitely should just wait and rent it, stream it, whatever, because it's not one of those films that you need to run out and see. It's kind of has little elements sort of reaching for a King's Speech kind of vibe, you know, which is a much bigger movie. But frankly, I like this one better than I liked, the Iron Lady. With Meryl Streep winning an Oscar for it. I like this movie better than that one. And I just thought it's not all yelling. It's, there's a good amount of oratory and you realize the value of a good speech and his coming around to realize, because his wife, you know, behind every successful man there's a more successful or better woman, is really what the case was here, is that his wife keeps him on an even keel and really kind of helps him understand his place in history and what he needs to be telling his people to have them support this effort. And he does. He learns the power of using his words to unite people and to get them to give them hope. And that's the ultimate message of this movie. And so I think, especially right now, I love that message that it's delivering. And to see a leader being very conflicted, but also doing what a good leader needs to do and saying what a good leader needs to say. We don't see enough of that, and I think that's what made this movie resonate, I think, with me more than it might have if I'd seen it a year ago. So I think it provides a new insight into Churchill, because a lot of people probably, it's a few days of his life, and I found that kind of an interesting take, and it worked for me. It wasn't great. It's not a great movie. But how you can hate it, I honestly do not understand.
I'll tell you
a
little bit more. So you mentioned his wife, Clementine. She's played by Miranda Richardson. And she comes off as actually the stronger of the pair. Mm-hmm. She doesn't take any of his nonsense. And he gives her a lot of nonsense. The director, Jonathan Teplitsky, he did 2013's The Railway Man. I think that was Colin Firth. Another World War II film, but on the opposite side of the planet. It shows Winston Churchill's, and everyone's known this, I guess, throughout history, that he was a depressive. He would lay down if something wasn't going right, and he'd be out for weeks. And Clementine kind of knew how to get him out of bed and to move him. And he got depressed during this three-day period before D-Day. And she said, "We don't need you," and after Eisenhower yelled at him for really getting on his nerves, you know, "We don't need you to be the strategic military man. You're the politician. You're there to make speeches." And a lot of people had to remind Churchill that, I guess, at that time, you're here to boost morale. But the yelling and the bloviating, even when he gets down on his knees by his bed and he prays to God for bad weather, he's yelling at God. He's like, this might as well be Julius Caesar. We haven't mentioned it yet, by the way. It's Brian Cox. He's an American playing Churchill, and makes a point to tell you that Churchill was half American anyway. Brian Cox is great. He's great.
He is.
But I think the director told him, milk it.
Well, and there is that sense of caricature, you know, that we've all seen the photos and the black and white newsreel footage. We've seen Churchill. And so in some ways you feel like he's portraying what we've all seen and trying to embody all those characteristics. You know, you've got the cigar, the constant cigar smoking and the same, the outfits and the hat. And, but also, I mean, the performances are all good. And I think that's what elevates it beyond horrible, because you think it was horrible, but I think the performances alone help make it a better movie. And you had Eisenhower's played by John Slattery, that people would know from Mad Men. So that it was kind of an interesting, you know, interesting role to see him in. I, what you saw is yelling and bloviating. I didn't feel that. And the only thing that I had an issue with was I felt it was over-directed, that they tried so hard to be artistic with the lights and the shadows and the darkness and the hat that's...
The metaphor on the beach.
The metaphor on the beach, yeah. With the hat going, skipping across the sand, and a lot of shots reflected in mirrors. And it was a little much. Like, I felt that it was like, okay, you know, you're trying too hard to be artistic here. And so to me, it was over the top, unnecessarily so. But I still enjoyed the speeches that were speeches, not so much what you would consider yelling.
The movie is one long speech.
The movie is one long speech. And so if you appreciate good speech writing and the slice of history as to what was going on in those days leading up to the invasion of Normandy, I learned something from this movie. And so that's why I appreciate it, is that when I can kind of make it through, it's just like an hour and 40 minutes. So it's a good running time.
As you would say, this feels more like 3 hours.
See,
and 40
I didn't
minutes.
Feel that way. I felt like it was just about right. It couldn't have gone on any longer. And so, yeah, once again, I think we were watching two completely very different movies.
Well, people are going to compare this movie. There's a lot of Churchill in pop culture right now. On Netflix, people have been watching The Crown. John Lithgow, another American, playing Churchill. I think he won a Golden Globe for his role. People are going to be comparing Brian Cox and John Lithgow, and how this TV series, The Crown, about a young Queen Elizabeth, so Churchill's a supporting character, but how they portray him and how Jonathan Teplitzky portrays Churchill.
Yeah.
So that's a game you could play if you're forced to go see this stupid movie.
I don't. Oh, never mind.
All right, one film I did not see this week that Hannah saw way back during award season when they were plugging it, that's finally getting a limited theatrical release here in the States, and also I think is being released on DVD today maybe, is I, Daniel Blake. And I remember you being very high on this film.
I did. I didn't even realize it hadn't been released at all yet, because I'm pretty sure I put it somewhere. I think I snuck it into my top 10 of 2016 because it's... And certainly this one's way better. It's much better than Churchill, I can give you that. So I do think it's one of those ones you should catch up with at some point. But it also won the Palme d'Or at the 2016 Cannes. Mm. And so it's the fact that, yeah, that it's just getting out there, I hope it doesn't get lost, because it's really this gripping human drama. It's got heart, though, and it's got moments of humor. And it's about this guy, Daniel Blake, played by Dave Johns, and he's a widower, and he is upper middle age. He has a heart attack, and he's a woodworker. And the doctor tells him, look, you know, you can't put any more strain on your heart. You cannot work for a while. You have to stop working. And so he goes to, you know, the British Social Services and basically applies for, I guess, what would be considered unemployment or disability, and he's told, well, we can't pay you unless you're actively looking for work. And he's like, I can't be actively looking for work because my doctor told me I can't work. And he gets trapped in this really vicious cycle of trying to survive. And in the meantime, so he goes on sort of this one-man crusade for compassion and for dignity against this bureaucracy. And he befriends this struggling single mother that he meets, played by Hayley Squires, really good performance from her, too. She's got two kids. They've moved to London to try and make a life for themselves. But the system fails her, too. And she's unable to get assistance. And so her life is spiraling. And the two of them together kind of build this makeshift family. It's very, it has a lot of the same characteristics for people who liked A Man Called Ove, I think, or Uwe will like this one as well. And it just, it's very moving. I cried. Everyone else in the theater had their tissues out. So it's just, it's a gripping, really well-told story. And it's just one of those small indies that if you see it, you really should go check it out because it's definitely worth it. Or if it's coming out VOD or DVD today, go, you know, think about finding it because it's really a solid little indie movie.
Well, if it won the Palme d'Or, then it's got some street cred going on for it, and it does sound better than Churchill, but better than Captain Underpants, I don't know. But when you said they got the families together, it reminded me, that's how they all became the Blake Bunch.
It's a drama at its core.
No, it sounds like one of those hard-edged, like Irish or Steel Town movies, like Billy Elliot, you know?
But a little softer than Billy Elliot, but definitely more along the lines of A Man Called Ove, where you just have this relationship forming between the widowed guy and a neighbor, and so there were actually some parallels for me, and they're both British films, and just, I mean, it really, it just is a good, I would call it a good indie chick flick.
Fair enough. All right, our next film, not too many people have seen, but the hardcore subgenre out there who likes Chinese martial art films, are going to see it. It's called God of War, and it's a Chinese film. It's in Chinese, so you're going to be reading it. There's also some Japanese subtitles in there. It's historical fiction, so some of this kind of happened back in, I don't know a lot about that time in China, 16th century China, I guess on the coastline, 1557 to be exact. It's not really the China you know today. It's the Ming Dynasty. They have a pirate problem, and pirates just keep invading the coastline and ransacking villages, and the army can't do anything about it. And it's actually, it turns out, not pirates. That's just a front. It's Japanese samurai behind the whole thing. And interesting, this kind of turned into a propaganda film. Once again, the Chinese are saying, look at the Japanese invading. They've been invading us throughout history and stealing all our stuff. And they're behind the whole thing. You don't see them up front, but they're behind the whole thing. So there's a little propaganda in this film, I think, from the Chinese government. But it's martial arts with swords, mainly. There are some early muskets involved. General Qi comes to the rescue. He's this general who comes out of nowhere who just knows how to tactically defeat these pirates, and he rises to the ranks, takes over as commanding general. So there's a very good early battle. There's a long bureaucratic red tape soft middle and a great battle at the end. So if you're just in it for the battles, there you go. There's your bookends. Because in the middle, it's just he has to go raise an army, get funds for the army, and you get to watch him try to get funds for the army, which is, let me tell you how riveting that is.
Did you dare rate this one above Wonder Woman?
I do. It's better than Wonder Woman. It's better than Wonder Woman.
I watched the trailer for this, and I went, no, no. Between the Japanese and English subtitles that came up on the trailer and the blood and the fighting.
Not a lot of blood.
There was absolutely nothing.
There's a strong woman in this film.
I did hear. You know,
General Qi's wife puts the sword on at the end and kicks some ass.
I heard. Artie Chick actually wrote her review, and she also said that there was some kick-ass female fighters in this movie. And she also found that she recommended it, too. And she called it very epic. Yeah. And she said it just felt very epic. And she would recommend it. She said, you know, it's not for everybody, but that martial arts lovers, history buffs, and battle strategy aficionados.
Oh, this is because all the battle strategy aficionados.
So for the five of you out there who don't want to see Wonder Woman and are looking for a 16th century Chinese battle, there's another movie for you that Charlie liked better.
Well, the writer-director, he's been around a while. He's got some cred. His name's Gordon Chan. He did 94's Fist of Legend, which really put Jet Li on the map. He did 2003's The Medallion with Jackie Chan. So, you know, people who know about this stuff know Gordon Chan. And also, I don't know the actor's name, but he's Jackie Chan's famous sparring partner. He's the fat guy in this film, so he's a funny guy. No, this film, don't get me wrong, has problems. But it was just, you know, I just felt like watching a martial arts movie after watching Churchill. It just, it's like, oh, I need a palate cleanser here.
I think...
And it's 83% on the tomato meter.
83, yeah. God of War.
Yeah.
Yeah, well, 83% for the 83 people.
The inverse of Churchill.
For the 83 people that will see this movie, and nowhere near the 93% on Rotten Tomatoes that Wonder Woman currently enjoys.
Yeah.
So if you're going to pull the Rotten Tomatoes card, you're going to have to realize that for the majority, Captain Underpants and...
I just don't know why. I will never understand why Wonder Woman struck such a chord with people. I don't see it.
It's... You did not watch the same movie. I hate to break it to you.
I was sitting next to you. I was sitting right next to you. And I just, what is it that was just made it so much better than any Avenger film?
It's not better. No, I don't agree with that. I do not put it above the Avenger films. I'm still a Marvel person over a DC Comics person. I enjoy them. But it came closer than most of these other DC comic movies to feeling like one of those Marvel Avengers movies that I enjoy. And it just, the expectations were so freaking high for this movie.
I put it on the same level as Thor and Thor 2, right there.
I put it really on the same level as that first Captain America movie. So I think it wasn't, I didn't go over the moon with that first one, but I liked it well enough to get invested in that character for the future movies. And I really feel it's the same thing with this one. And you have to realize, I mean, Wonder Woman is such a part of, an iconic part of American history as the preeminent female superhero. So even though there may have been female superhero movies in the past,
specifically winners like Catwoman and Elektra,
that just does not count. So this is the first one that really counts. And the fact that it really counts and that they pull it off and that it works for different people for different reasons, you're in that rare minority where all the things they were throwing at you to make sure it worked for somebody, you hated them all. And they just didn't, I don't know what they could have done to make you like
take it more seriously. Take it more seriously.
No, see, I think you couldn't take it more seriously.
Not as seriously as Batman v Superman, but you're in the World War I trenches. Trench warfare. That's the high point of the film right there. That charge across no man's land. And then it just goes to crap again.
And when they're in that moment, they're serious when they have to be serious, and they take advantage of the opportunity to be lighter when they can. And I think you just missed it.
That's fine. I'm not gonna lose sleep over missing Wonder Woman.
But I think you need to understand that you're in the minority
because
for a
this
reason.
Is just a week. Yeah, just 1 week flash in the pan. Last week, it was all Pirates of the Caribbean. But the week before that, it was all Guardians of the Galaxy 2. Next week, it's going to be all Tom Cruise and the Mummy. This is just a week in my life.
Which I will unfortunately miss. It is just a week, except that it's not because we'll see more of Wonder Woman. And I think there's a lot more riding on it than Pirates is Pirates. It made a gazillion dollars even though it sucked. That's what really is bad for me.
It made a gazillion dollars.
It made
the 60s.
A lot of money even though it's dunk.
Yeah, it was worse than Wonder Woman.
And way worse. And yet, if Wonder Woman's so much better, and if it can make a decent amount of money, it's out to prove a point, too, that you can have a female director helming one of these big-budget superhero movies and still get the audience, get people to come out and see it. And that's why it's the buzz is what it is right now. And that's why it's a little more important than your average week to week.
It is not in the same league as Guardians of the Galaxy, either of them.
I don't agree. I think Wonder Woman, for what it's trying to be, is better or just as good as Guardians of the Galaxy for what it was being. Guardians of the Galaxy is a light, fun sci-fi flick. Wonder Woman, there's just more to it, and there's more to be invested in with the Wonder Woman movie. And so I would disagree.
I just don't see it. All right, that's a great wrap-up for Wonder Woman. To finish the wrap-up, Captain Underpants, everything you need to know is in the title. Churchill, everything you need to know is in the title, but louder. I, Daniel Blake,
is the indie that you should go seek out. So I would put I, Daniel Blake is my second favorite of the week behind Wonder Woman.
God of War, yeah, you already know if you like that sort of genre or not. And I wouldn't expect it either. God of War is my pick of the week.
Oh, God. And that is why the Cinema Clash is the Cinema Clash, Charlie, because, boy, that's just wrong.
Cheers, Hannah. All right. Thank you very much for listening to the Cinema Clash. I'm Charlie Jewell.
I'm Hannah Buchdahl.
Thank you.
Take care.
Cinema Clash with Charlie and Hannah is presented twice each weekend on RadioSt.Pete.com at 5:15 Eastern on Saturday and 9:15 on Sunday mornings. Cinema Clash with Charlie Jewell of CharlieJewell.com and Hannah Buchdahl of ChickFlix.net. Listen again for Cinema Clash on RadioSt.Pete.com.